Good morning, everyone, and welcome to, it's Thursday, January 11th, to the Josephine County Board of County Commissioners. This is our County Administrative Workshop in the Board of County Commissioners Conference Room. Present are all three commissioners, Commissioner Hare, Commissioner Morgan, and Commissioner DeYoung. First up this morning, item 1A is from the Sheriff, and modification number 3 of agreement number 16-LE-1106-1000-013 between Josephine County Sheriff's Office and the U.S. Forest Service for Patrol Services. Sheriff?
Well, I saw you. Thank you.
Welcome to 2018.
Board, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to 2018. That's going to be a fantastic year, I think, for the Sheriff's Office again. I saw your guys' agenda for the whole day, and so I'm going to make this real short, simple, and easy on you. I'd like to accept $70,000 from the U.S. Forest Service to fund a six-month Forest Service deputy again. Last year we had RAC funds come out to supplement the 70 and add more. I'm looking for those again from the U.S. Forest Service, and I'm working on getting that, but at least we could accept a six-month, which is standard, which is what we've had. It started, last year, a year and a half ago, when I negotiated the first 70. But at any rate, that's all I'm requesting.
I noticed in there that mileage above and beyond the 70,000.
No, this is all encompassing,
including this thing.
Everything. Okay. It's
what if your mileage got to be to where it says 70 cents a mile or something like that?
Basically, we take the $70,000 and we fund that deputy fully, including everything.
Okay.
Up until the time it runs out, and then at that point it would be over.
This is an agreement from May till December, so it's not for the full
year.
Right,
not for the full year.
We all know that a deputy plus a car costs more than $70,000 mm-hmm. a year, and not to put a damper on it, but RAC funds that were appropriated last year were, I believe, for a 1 year.
Yes.
Appropriation.
It goes year to year.
It's possible that Secure Rural Schools. There's conversations that Orrin Hatch has got. An offset in the Senate, and Senator Wydenham are working on a version that's both in the Senate and the House that talks about that. So if that happens, there will be Title II funds that will flow through the RAC, and I think it's been really well received by the community to have those as a resource, and it makes a lot of sense to me. I believe there's a diminishing point of Secure Rural Schools payments that shouldn't have a Title II and Title III component, but if they're going back into our Sheriff's Department locally and really helps the whole region, I think that it's a good use of those funds, and certainly appreciate them willing to partner with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this wasn't, we've had the relationship with the BLM?
Correct. The BLM we've always had. We've not.
This one is something you have been very proactive about.
Correct.
Getting. That really, we have a tremendous amount of public lands, federal lands in Josephine County. There's about 300,000 acres of BLM, but there's more than that of Forest Service land.
Uh-huh.
So I really appreciate you doing that. That's something that
it's worked out really well.
Really proud of, and we're proud of.
It's worked out really well for our county.
I can't thank you enough for doing that.
Absolutely.
How does it work with staffing and stuff? You're not hiring someone special for this, or is it bringing back somebody? Or how's that work?
Staffing was the deputy I just pulled out of patrol, and we're backfilling. We have backfilled that position with new hires. The individual that's currently in that is looking at retiring. Has notified me he's looking at retiring in February of 19. So actually, it would work out perfectly well should we not get any RAC funds. It won't affect our staffing at all.
Mm-hmm.
I know that individual is interested in coming back on a 6 month basis. So really, timing-wise and staffing-wise, it's working out perfect.
So not this February, but next February?
Correct.
And so we'd have money to fund it through December, and then if we needed 2 months, that's
exactly.
Not a big deal.
Yes, sir.
And that would be really a great...
It's perfect. It's working out perfect. I like it. It couldn't be sweeter.
Round peg. That's
uh-huh.
great.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we'll move this forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll move to the business session, and will you be there to make a presentation on this?
No.
I think we can speak to it. It's a.
I won't.
It's a continuation.
Why did I even ask?
He's got a gun.
It's a continuation of an existing contract, and I think
it's been
working out really, really well. You're the liaison, Mr. Chair.
I look up through the bottom of that funnel.
Delegation is a real good sign of leadership.
Thank you,
true
sir.
Leadership.
Yeah, thank you, sir, for pushing this forward for me.
Yeah. We'll go ahead and, we'll take care of it for you, Sheriff. Don't trouble yourself.
Commissioners, have a good day. Good
luck.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you for your time.
Well, moving along to item two, Department of Business, Public Works. Mr. Brandis?
I have to interview you.
Report, and this is to A1, which is a report and recommendation for the Oregon Public Works Cooperative Assistance Agreement, OPWCAA.
Good morning, Commissioners. I've got Ted Trujillo, our new community manager, with me.
Good morning.
We will we'll get to this here after this one.
So, my name is Simon.
Simon. I'm Ted Trujillo.
Hobbled.
Hi, yes. Lily.
Nine and a
Ted
half.
Ted Trujillo.
Right. Nice to meet you.
Glad to meet you, sir.
It's more like
thank you for coming in.
This thing does a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And you wouldn't know it until you don't have it.
Yeah.
But shaving is really
At least you're able
exciting.
To grow a good beard.
Yeah. Opposable thumbs are a good invention.
Right. Well, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
The fleet's very important to the county.
Yes.
And
I get this chair.
An important role.
Shrink?
So the cooperative agreement the county has been a part of for the previous 5 years. We're coming up on the end of the agreement. And as I put in my report and recommendation there, this is almost unanimously held by the Oregon counties and 200-plus cities. Effectively, what this does is just has the framework in place in the incident, in the case of a major disaster. We have not been requested, nor have we requested use of this in the last 5 years. I would foresee this as being like a tsunami, an earthquake, a volcano-type incident where we're being asked to say, hey, you guys have 30 18-inch cores sitting there in your yard. Can you get them over to Brookings because we lost all of our infrastructure? It doesn't typically make sense to say, you guys got a loader. Can you drive it up to Salem so we can use it for 2 weeks? It's going to have to be a pretty big bore item. This puts that in place, also allows us to maximize that exchange for the federal reimbursement. So, and the other thing to remember is we always have the right to say no. So if you did have an area-wide incident, earthquake, whatever else, and they say, we need your loader, we can say, sorry, we need the loader here, we got our own problems. So this is a request to re-enter into the agreement for the next 5 years, and fingers crossed, you bring your umbrella so it doesn't rain, right?
Any questions?
Nope, should be fine. What does that have to do with our sister county organization? I thought you in the past have had conversations, but that's more of like a Cascadia event.
There's a second smaller one that's primarily like Southwest counties. I don't have it in front of me, but it's like us, Jackson, Douglas, the two coastal counties and some of those, which is, the same idea, but a little more lower bore for us helping ourselves down here, which we haven't had to enact that one either. So
okay.
Same
okay.
idea.
Okay. Moving on to item 2A2, report and recommendation for the purchase of a new 2018 Jeep Cherokee.
I'll give you the short preamble. So this one's in front of you because this was not budgeted, as you might guess. The vehicle was totaled, and it has needed to be replaced for building and safety. It's one of their typical heavy-use vehicles. So I will let Ted give you a little more of the background on where we're moving from here.
So the vehicle was involved as an accident, as Rob said, and it was the other party's fault. So the vehicle was totaled, and we received proceeds approximately the amount of $11,000 to offset our loss. So the balance that we're asking for is to purchase another vehicle, which the department does need. Typically, they're utilizing their vehicles about 10,000 miles a year, which is, by our standards, very good. So they do have a need for the vehicle. So we would like to request that we would proceed with that.
Is that new Jeep, is it four-wheel drive?
It is.
Because I'm assuming you need four-wheel drive if you're going out on construction sites and getting back into this. Somebody
right. Yes.
And for the department, for their depreciation charges, we net that out. So whatever the 120,000 miles was not depreciated, that would be the only part we'd still have to recapture. But they've also got $11,000 coming in that they've been credited. So without having it in front of me, my guess is they're only going to be paying depreciation on $20,000 of that $27,000 new vehicle because they've already been paying.
Okay. Any other questions?
How is, I don't remember how our insurance goes on vehicles. Are we self-insured on that? And if not, why not? We should be.
Right. And I believe $1,000 is the deductible.
Correct.
I mean, are we self-insured? That sounds like CIS. I remember that we have a $1,000 deductible, and that's a CIS element. That's not a self-insured. And if I think that we should investigate the idea of being self-insured on our vehicles, and I know that you kind of get a lower rate the more you insure with CIS, you get a better rate. And
right.
we're looking into that for a whole host of different things.
Right.
that we used to be self-insured in 2005.
Right.
I'd like to see, that's one of the benefits, I think, of getting our general fund at a reasonable level, is that we can find ourselves saving some money on insurance when we can kind of take care of it in-house, that we're going to be, it'll be either a wash or the insurance money is making up money for other counties that are loss leaders. We have a great safety rate. We probably have a low accident rate. All of those things come in for us trying to look at the idea of saving money, cutting costs, and being self-insured. So just something to...
Are you talking on the collision side, being self-insured, because liability and...
No, yeah, you'd have to figure out which one makes sense. Yeah.
Can you still do that? Like, say, for instance...
I don't know. CIS will be the one to tell us.
Yeah, and we were at one time, we'd have to work with HR. I don't remember if the change was due to falling below whatever magic threshold of X number of vehicles made it not make sense, but we can work with JJ and rerun the numbers.
General fund, we always have that. Usually we have that umbrella insurance, so if it approaches a certain number, and then it's catastrophic. And we had travelers for years on our balloon over $100,000 or over $1 million that we are covered for those things, but that costs a lot less than just being generally covered for all liability with a $1,000 deductible.
I know in my personal policy, it's the collision's the big one. You know, because you're actually, as cars, the price of vehicles go up, you know, their obligation goes up.
That's actually, for us, not a big consideration. It's the personal injury liability that's really high. That's where you get into... Few people are getting into collisions with $100,000 cars, but $100,000 insurance, you know, when if you get hurt, $100,000 is nothing. Yeah. So,
but that's what I was wondering when you said you wanted to look into being self-insured. That means you don't have an insurance company backing you anymore.
No, we pay for the car if something happens, and we have a tendency. Insurance recoups its costs. We pay for it anyway, and we usually cover somebody else's liabilities when other counties are not doing as well is ours. So it's just something to consider that there is a point at which it makes sense for us to be self-insured, and I don't know where that is, and we just need to keep that on the horizon as we build back the size of our fleet, build back the number of employees, and improve our general fund ending fund balance. All of those things take into consideration that it might make more sense for us to be self-insured. There are large counties, a lot of counties that are.
And would they potentially let us have some carve-outs as well? Because that would be another thing to look at. Some of the higher rate programs we may want to carve out and leave them with CIS, if they'll let us pick and choose like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that'd be kind of up to them. And usually, you know, the more things you put into a policy, the cheaper overall it gets.
Right.
So we just have to look, see if there's, if there's any true savings there.
Right.
If you're going out on a limb and you're not really saving substantially,
maybe
it's not, you shouldn't be out there.
Fleet is a low-dollar usually risk element. It's not like general liability through workers' compensation or malpractice kind of claims. Those are real expensive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, just something to consider.
Sure. And then just a couple of peripherally related things, just so the board's aware. Ted and Lori and I are working on reinstituting a minimum miles policy. We had this at one time, maybe predated you, it was close.
I remember it.
But effectively saying that, you know, if you're going to get billed for at least 300 miles a month for this department owned vehicle, because we're running into lots of vehicles that are running 1,200, 15 miles, 100 miles a year.
Right.
And we're just eating the depreciation. They're 10 years old with 20,000 miles.
Arthur's not in the room, but that's the idea that we shouldn't have those vehicles.
Right.
Those people need to go to Enterprise Rent a Car. Rent that car the four times a year that they need to jump up to Portland or some go to Medford.
Right. So we're working out.
I have an example of one of those cars that wouldn't fit that scenario, though.
Ours.
Yes.
We don't.
Yeah, and there are some programs.
No, not just ours. Not just ours.
Larry Graves.
The cage guard at Community Corrections. They leave it at the office so that whoever does an arrest at the office can transport.
And you can't rent one of those from Enterprise.
Right. Correct.
There are some one-offs. Larry Graves has a pickup.
And they go
at each
back
airport.
And forth to the jail multiple times a week. It just doesn't rack up the miles.
Yeah, Larry's two pickups, I think, are like 2,500 miles each, but he's got to have a pickup at each airport. There are programs specific.
Yeah.
But there are also programs where we see they have five similar vehicles that drive a grand total of 12,000 miles a year. So we're going to look for that sweet spot to squeeze them where it's painful. If they say, yeah, take this back, we'll go to Enterprise. And we'll work out all the options to say, here's what Enterprise would cost. Here's what just paying per diems or mileage rates to your folks would cost. So that's going to be coming along.
Good.
And then one other, we just wanted to get you this. So Ted has completed just kind of an analysis of how often we do our PMI rates. And this is kind of to the management partners review, I just want to get this in front of you guys to see if you want this level of detail or if you want me to just start off by saying, here's how we're addressing this item, and if you want more info, I'll give it to you. Because I'm guessing you don't want 63 of these. But if you do, we certainly can, and we can talk through them to whatever level of detail. But this just kind of gives you a sense of the analysis, okay, in this case, on what we're doing with our PMI rates. And what I did not get on there was your projection for total fleet savings on the PMI was going to be...
looking at $21,000 approximately annually in this more... we're going to push out the mileage requirements on the oil changes. So for example, where we had done 3,000 in the past, we're going to move that to 4,000. Where some cases there were vehicles that are now at 5,000 that were at 3,000.
How accurate? I mean, do we have an idea of, yeah, it's supposed to be 3,000, but people don't end up coming in until 4,000. You push it to 4,000, people don't end up coming until 5,000.
Right, right.
Are we along those? Are we done? Do we understand how people work?
I can't tell you with exact certainty
yet. Few people
yet.
Do it right on.
My sense is that, yes, we're actually coming in within, say, 500 miles of that.
Oh, good.
Our system, it tracks every time someone goes and buys gas. They put in their vehicle, they put in the odometer, and then once that uploads into the system, it pings and says, hey, that car hit 62,000 miles of oil change time. And we then ping them. Conceivably, if they didn't get around to it, it might be one more after that. So, yeah, you could be plus or minus 300-500 miles, but we're generally close. And obviously, PMI work is a bit of a guesswork. You know, how much extra damage do you do to that car by running at 5,500 instead of 5,000 miles between oil changes?
Well, and the other thing is, like, some cars are doing highway miles, where those ones are not that bad. But forestry needs theirs changed every 3,000 miles because they're doing off-road.
Our pilot cars,
right?
They're averaging 7 miles an hour for a whole day, so it only drove 30 miles, but those were 30 hard dang miles. There's going to be a lot of work required of Ted and the mechanics to kind of individualize some of those.
There for a while you could buy synthetic oils and they said, you know, 7,000-8,000 miles, 10,000 miles on an oil change. I don't know if we want to look into there because synthetic oils a lot of times are a little bit more expensive than regular oil. That's number one. But number two is how long are we going to keep these cars? Mm-hmm. In other words, I've watched people that just change their oil. You know, and growing up, I've seen people say, I change your oil whenever I get around to it. And they get 150, 160,000 miles out of a car, just like the guy that changes it every 2,000 miles. Mm-hmm. Mattered not for some reason. Mm-hmm. And I historically, I don't see government vehicles racking up into the 200,000 miles. Now, you probably got
historically, we have, yes.
You've got
goal
examples
is to kick
of that.
Around 120.
Yeah, we're going to really be necking that down.
But even at 120, you know, 120, I can see that other things are going to start blinking out at that time.
Correct.
It's not engine wear related to oil.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm not a proponent of going much past 120 because, you know, and I've got a pickup that I had that I sold to my son in Oklahoma City, it just crossed over 300,000 miles and never had a head off of it. So, you know, technology is to that point. But it isn't because we change oil every 3,000 miles. So I think the oil thing, you could probably, you know, I don't know how much annually you would save, and if you were going to have, do you have catastrophic failures, of engine failures? How many a year do you have? You know, Sheriff's Park is probably the world's worst on cars because they're mashing the floor all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if you have any tracking on that at all or what.
That's only if they're lucky.
Yeah. And the reality is our fleet size is not big enough to have huge normalized, you know, rates of expecting what are your engine failures. So a lot of it is going to depend on the mechanic savvy. Unfortunately, especially on the county fleet side, those two guys have, I think, 29 years between them with the county. So they know these vehicles pretty intimately.
Can we talk about fleet, like, at a general discussion?
Absolutely.
I think that would be fantastic.
I saw a list of 400 vehicles or something that was considered in our fleet, and I'd like it parceled out.
It must have been a combo of Public Works and County, because county's like 131, I believe.
I'd like it parceled out to, like, you know, a dump truck is not in my... It's part of the fleet, a generator, trailer.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I'm talking about. I like it.
It must have been a combined list. Was the insurance list, probably? That's
probably
how we submit them. Yeah. We can get both.
I need something that's compartmentalized. These are the vehicles that are road transportation style.
Yeah.
And then we could go through all of these things. I don't know if this is the right time. This is great information. I think along these lines, or general, you know, consolidated issues.
I don't mind 63 of these, honestly.
Going through those, but that's probably more appropriate for more of a long-term discussion with, you know, stuff comprehensive mm-hmm. to talk about. Mm-hmm. This is good to start. Jeep is fine for me, and the other one is a consent element, and so I think we can move those forward. Great to meet you, Ted.
Okay, thank you.
Will you be there to speak on the on behalf?
If you would like me to.
I think I'd like you to.
Okay.
The only thing, for me, maintenance is more than just oil changes.
Absolutely.
And so this, I mean, $21,000 is great savings, but it's just one aspect of maintenance, and I don't think that was all they were leaving to. The other thing is just for that next discussion, when you do have the general discussion, there was an opportunity. We'd got some presentations from the Verizon devices that you can put on all the items, one for GPS locators, the other for use, and are we driving within speed limits? Are we, you know, idling too long? Are we doing all those things, wear and tear of the vehicle that gives you the reports back? I'd be interested to see how effective that would be for the fleet vehicles or not.
We could get a quote on it. What it would cost to
not just cost, but effectiveness of say. I mean, is it, would it meet a need and stuff like that? I mean,
I see that, and we've got certain managers that have just bit the bullet and said, "Yeah, this is worth it." Parks mm-hmm. is one of those. Mm-hmm. There might be others. I think that that probably be kind of. It'd be great to hear from the manager on whether or not they felt, "Yeah, I need to know." You know, I think the assessor's office was an interesting one that mm-hmm. would have been very helpful. In a previous case, you guys were probably here for that, where we could have known a lot had we had that. And then, but there's other offices that are like, no, nah, I don't see that being exactly so.
Part of my thinking is if it comes from fleet, it's not targeting a specific population. It's for you guys saying overall, how is the conduct of going on in our vehicles and all this kind of, I mean, it can get down to the level of, I have this many stops I'm going in a day, and I put those addresses in, and it gives me a map of the best mm-hmm. route to go for efficiency. I'm not a UPS driver, though, so I don't know if I need that. Sure. But it's still one of those things that there's some possibilities, and if it's at a decision of the fleet level, then it doesn't get into the department politics or other issues. It's a matter of efficiency for a department. But mm-hmm. that could be a discussion for another day. I knew there was reasons why they said it, if it should be fleet or if it should be individual departments, and I think it'd be worth us having that conversation.
Okay. I have an extensive background in that technology. In my previous life, we had 500 of those Verizon devices deployed. So
there's also a safety factor here. We get out in the mountains, and you can't mm-hmm. you know where the guy went, you think, but you really can't pinpoint where he is. Mm-hmm. If he didn't come back, so he had health problems or something, mm-hmm. he's out checking something, I had health problems, I can't call in because the radio doesn't work, or it's, you know, he's in a canyon somewhere. I think it'd be very valuable from that, you know, for our employee standpoint too, to know where they are, mm-hmm. so you can send help. But those are for another day.
Okay.
You know, going back to the oil changes and this and that and the other thing, most of the newer cars have a deal that says your oil changes do. It's a matter of just shifting it from 3,000 to 4,000, and then. Go from there. But.
Right. And the other reality with the oil change is a small piece of that PMI.
Yes,
we also get into 80 odd safety points so. Inspections, which I'm not.
There are other things that
well.
Go on when it comes in for an oil change. You check all the lights and everything, make sure they
exactly.
all work. And
is that something we should
we'll
be doing in house, or is that a maintenance component that could be outsourced?
Yeah, and I think we talked about that at one
topics
time.
Topics for the next talk, not for now.
For the next talk, question. And one of the things is that like, do you take 3/4 ton trucks and below? And farm all that out or something. You know, something else that gives us some... Mm-hmm. We'll look forward to your recommendations.
Certainly.
But we'll set up a time to do that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
See you.
Thank you. Carrying on Department 2, or excuse me, Department Business is 2B, Juvenile Justice. Mr. Goodman. Number one is a memorandum of understanding between Josephine County, the Grants Pass School District, to detail specifics. Provisions of the Juvenile Detention Education Program, including number of school days, hours of instruction, enrollment requirements, information sharing, other relevant matters as required by Section 5 of the corresponding detention IGA.
Good morning.
We'll take these one at a time. There's three of them.
Thank you. Yes, I could put you to sleep with the details on this, but if I could hit the high points and answer any questions, I think that's probably the way to go. Item 1... The first memorandum is basically what state law says that a county and a school district needs to do if you have a juvenile detention center. So these are responsibilities of both. So basically we provide the building, the maybe computer materials for the teacher, you know, this kind of
and
thing.
And the students, you provide the students.
We do provide the students. It also lays out, it's different requirements for a, what we call a JDET program, Juvenile Detention Education Program. Education days are different. They're 220 days if you're in juvenile detention because they're in there year-round. So the hours per day, hours per year are different. They're actually more. So things like that. That's what this one is about. It's basically compliance.
Pardon my ignorance, but if you've got a kid in there for that's in the detention side and they're there for 2 months or whatever and then they're found, they're acquitted or blah, 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 do they go back to school? They don't go back to the detention. And it's just kind of hard for these teachers to find
it is extremely
kids
hard.
Coming in at different levels and times of year and
yes,
and that there for 2 months and then they're gone, or
they're there
or
for
a
few
week.
Weeks
or 2 weeks
is even harder.
Oh,
and
man.
that's part of this. It's also part of why school basically goes year round. There's a component to finding out. Many of these kids have either no credits or very few credits. It's getting a quick assessment of their grade level and getting them plugged into
a curriculum.
Mostly what will be used is an online education program called Odysseyware that the district uses for basically credit retrieval. Kids in alternative programs. So they can get them right in there and that and working on a GED or working on retrieving credits or basically just getting up to speed.
You almost need an individual teacher for each kid.
Just about.
In there.
Just about.
How does one teacher try to do?
Yeah, fortunately, you're not dealing with 20 or 30 kids.
Yeah, you're right.
An average daily population of 6 or 7 or 5 or whatever makes it a little more sane.
Yeah.
But we don't know what is going to trip the switch in that kid's mind up here as to which path he's going to go down. And one of the key things is if they don't understand in the classroom, they reject it. And maybe this is their opportunity with your instructor and a little bit more focus. They go, that's what that means. And you go, yep, that's as simple as it is. And when that thing clicks, then they come out of your program and go, okay, I know I can do this now. And if that's the part that changes it under your instruction, you've done way more than the public school system was able to do because of the amount of kids that they have to deal with. So I think it's a fantastic program.
Just anecdotally, I mean, we have literally had kids, say, 16 years old, maybe a second grade reading level, in for a long period of time that are reading, like, book after book after book by the time they leave
all
us.
All of a sudden they went.
4 or 5, 6 months later.
Yeah.
I mean, they are a captive.
Right.
You know, our attendance is 100%. We brag about that.
Yeah.
So
Donnie won't be late for school
day. right. So that's number one, and that's
Before you go to the second one, is there any continuation with the school district as far as documentation? Or, I mean, by doing the Odysseye program, is there some continuity between the two, that if they have a kid in their school and they say he's here, they get in yours, all of a sudden they can continue on?
There is. That's the beauty of that particular system, is it follows the kid forever, even if they go to a different district.
Okay.
And so that's number one, basically just compliance with what Oregon law says the program should be. And number two
before
is,
you go on,
yes,
you, I think we have to read the titles.
Okay.
Because
we only read the first title.
Yeah.
So I think he was going to do that.
Yeah, so I should read 1, 2, and 3?
Is there a reason why it's just District 7 other than geography? And I'm just wondering about, so if it's a county kid that gets
kicked
out to the county, there's continuity there, even if it's District 7?
Yes.
They're communicating?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Okay, so I'll read 1.
No,
2. You did already.
I did read 1, so... B2 is intergovernment agreement between Josephine County and Grants Pass School District Number 7 to facilitate educational services to students residing in Josephine County Juvenile Detention Facility.
Right, and this is where the first one was basically the law and what you have to do if you have that JDET program. This one is the agreement between. What's exciting about this one this time around is that the district is providing a full FTE through State Department of Education funds for this program. We really struggled, and a lot of smaller detentions struggled in the past, because you don't generate what they call the ADM, average, when you're paid for a kid sitting in a chair every day. Our population does not nearly
cover
the cost of a teacher. So we would have teachers' aides. We would use a lot of, we had to get very creative. Well, now the Department of Ed stepped up and said, even for smaller detention centers, we'll provide a full FTE teacher. Excellent. It's a District 7 employee, but they work very closely with us. So that's a bit of a change here, but that's this is the district providing the
and they have to continue to provide that. In other words, if they lose, they lose that teacher to retirement, or they have to replace them immediately.
Correct, right. Another challenge there,
but
we do have worked out, is the substitute pool, which you might understand. Some folks aren't just jumping up and down to go into a detention center and be a substitute. But I think what the districts did is they talk very well together with Three Rivers, who runs Newbridge, which is inside the Oregon Youth Authority, and they're utilizing their sub pool and having those folks who are a little more familiar with security and control, that kind of thing.
Do you have discretion about teachers? You get a teacher that's just not clicking?
We do. Well, we have great communication. The folks at D7 are great. Our supervisor was on their hiring panel. In fact, the teacher that they chose was a staff in the facility and did this job before 5 years ago. So that was great. The one that really I think is probably most important that has some money attached to it is number 3.
I'll read that for you.
Okay.
Item B3 is an intergovernment agreement between Josephine County and Grass Pass School District Number 7 to facilitate educational services to students residing in the Josephine County Youth Authority.
Shelter. Right. So this is our residential non-secured program. So it's a wholly separate education program. And this is our program as a department. And we are under District 7 in that we are an alternative school. So if you know, like, Insight is one where kids are maybe expelled from public school and referred to an alternative education setting, that's what we are in our shelter, because we have kids from really all over the county and the region sometimes, and stays are all over the place. It's just about impossible to get a kid into that program, enroll them into North Middle School, and then they're gone in 3 weeks. And then so we provide that in-house. And we will be this time around able to provide credits, which we hadn't been able to do before, because this program will be linked to the Odysseyware that they use in detention. So if a kid is enrolled, middle school doesn't award credits, but high school does. So if we do have the high school kid, we can get them into that program. And this one, I think it's page 3. A few lines down, the formula is a little bit hard to understand, but basically it gives, we do get the ADM for students in the shelter program. So it outlines there about 4 lines down. That's a cost per year.
The $8,000 or the $7,000?
The $7,000. So because we are under District 7, they take their admin cut at the top. But basically, per year, per student, this will generate that $7,058.60, and that equates to so much a day if it's a short stay. So this helps offset nearly our entire education staff in shelter. As the years go by, our capacity there is 12, and so it get as they go up in steps, it gets a little bit harder to do that.
But is 12 an appropriate capacity, or is there... any plan for expansion? Was there a design for the building when it was built?
A very poor design.
No, I know. I've been all through that.
We're stuck with. But so what happens with the residential program? There's a tipping point in staff to kid ratios.
Right.
And when we go from 12 to, say, the physical capacity is 16,
right.
But going from the 12 to the 16, it really gets. And you get into a place where you're packing a lot of kids into...
Too small.
They said 16, but it's really designed for 12.
Okay.
And then it doesn't... we can still hit that break-even point, I think, but it makes everything a little more...
challenging.
Yeah. Okay. But it is something that we're committed to looking at as we go forward, what the need is.
Well, the nice thing... Parts with a Mission is another option mm-hmm. to the community that we didn't have in 2014 right. or 13. So it feels as though maybe the portfolio of options in the community is a little bit different than it used to be.
Definitely. There are kids that, most of the kids that we take don't meet that definition really of homeless, which is what the HEARTS program is. And so our communication with that program is that we see referrals both ways.
Right.
We get a kid into our program that truly meets that homeless definition that they can serve long term and maybe get into a safe home foster environment. Yeah. We do that. They get the kid in there that is not homeless, but home is not
an option.
They refer that kid to us. And so we have a very good relationship.
Is there a time limit? How long they can stay there?
No official
determination within 3 weeks or
in the residential program mm-hmm. as far as like maximum length of stay
mm-hmm. usually 18
they are right. there's really no ceiling on it. We are providing a higher level of service than we did last time around, so the length of stay will be a little higher, so 3 months. The 3 to 6 month as a target, but they can go up to a year if the need is there.
What happens on the other side of that to make where they left more, you know, how do you correct where they left so they can get back there?
That's the idea working with the system as a whole. If they left home and the idea is reintegration and getting that kid back into their right. home, then that is us working with maybe child welfare and mental health and all of those agencies, maybe corrections, community care, you know, all of those to help make that happen. A lot of times the kid is maybe the ship already sailed for going back home and foster home is in their future.
Right.
And the thing that what we provide them is readiness to be ready for that next move.
Well, that was one of the elements of HEARTS with the Mission that I really liked was that right. they were not only just going to take the youngster and separate them and work with that youngster, but they were going to bring the parents in.
Correct.
Sometimes that's a two-way street.
Right.
You know, the parent doesn't understand the child doesn't understand the parent.
The most difficult component.
And then the friction begins. Right. But that's one of the elements of HEARTS that really turned my thinking about Caleb's mm-hmm. program up there was that it had that element in it. So,
right.
So, is it okay to move these three forward? Mm-hmm. Commissioners, both of you? Both in agreement? I'm in agreement also. So we will move all three of these forward to the weekly business session. Will you be there to speak, Jim?
I'm in Salem next week.
You're in Salem then? So then, Commissioner Morgan?
I can either send a supervisor or if Commissioner Morgan.
It's up to you, Commissioner.
So this is the 17th day after opening. Your supervisor going to be busy?
Probably. We can carve out the time, though. I mean,
you guys don't have to work it out today. It's a week away.
Okay.
So yeah.
Just, we all understand it's the board's ultimate responsibility to handle it.
Right.
I'm going to put Lily down here. And we'll see how you work that out, Commissioner.
Yeah. It really shouldn't be a problem.
Any other questions for Mr. Goodwin?
No.
Good luck today. We'll see you this afternoon.
Yes, open house.
Got refreshments?
This evening. We have refreshments.
Cookies?
Yes, we do.
The only thing that I had is it. You didn't do a department update, justifiably so, as busy as you are.
Yeah.
I think at some point we do need to schedule kind of a, not a makeup, but, you know, of all that was accomplished, you know, I don't think we've actually gone through that. And the open house is one piece of that, but it mm-hmm. isn't the same thing as making kind of like a quasi-formal report. I think that would be advantageous after the opening, get your feet under you, to do a weekly business session 5 to 10 minute mm-hmm. presentation about how far you've come in such a short amount of time, what it took to get there, something to that
sure.
nature.
So at a business
as a report, yes. That
great.
Would be,
I know we're on
great.
The calendar for
February
I think
first.
The first mm-hmm. for our actual update
okay.
here, but maybe we push it forward the next couple of weeks after that. And then finally, just as a timeline.
I'm okay with you guys working that out together.
The we are on track to open detention on the 16th, Tuesday the 16th, day after MLK. We're a couple of weeks behind, thankfully, with the state on our paperwork for our residential program, which I think is a very good thing. It will allow staff a couple of weeks in the building with one program to acclimate to the building, which is really complete today. Yeah. They haven't had a chance to be in there and working in workstations. And
so
doing
your anything. Staff is going to get an open house tonight as well.
They yeah. are. And so tonight they will be, you mentioned meetings, some of the line staff, they'll be in the black polo shirts, identified as our facility staff, and they're pretty Great. Excited. They're pretty excited about it.
In the bar situation, this is called a soft opening.
Yes.
one of the things I think would be really, that would be kind of nice to the public is that you've been shut down for 5 to 6 years. What did you have to do? What changed in your world between then and now of what you're providing, what you have to provide, and what upgrades you had to make? Because it wasn't mm-hmm. just a deal where you shut it one down, you just walk in, turn the lights back on, and turn the gas valve on and the water heater. There were so many different things that have come forward since then
right.
in your world that I think it would be great to just kind of upgrade the public as to what you right. really had to do to bring this thing back up. Because
right.
it's their money that we're spending that spun off of that levy.
Yes.
And I think it's very important that they know where their money went.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
And just as a final, shout out, obviously facility services, HR, IT, we feel like we've worked some departments really, really hard in the last couple of months, and yeah. we appreciate that. It's been a great team effort. I mean, we set some ambitious dates and could not have done it without the support of these other departments, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so we'll move this forward so that we can business session.
The board should recognize is these. Most of these departments are set up to maintain status quo. They're not necessarily geared up for huge projects like this. And so it just calls out the nature of understanding the context of when you're doing a project like that. You have items at the fairgrounds. You have a $500,000 project of the camera system at the jail. And everything that comes up on a daily basis, we replace. I'm just talking about facilities, but IT's the same way. They're actually at some of the lowest staffing levels they've ever been at. And to bring them online, people's frustrations about, well, IT didn't respond to, you know, my website update or something like that. Yeah, they didn't, because they've got this project that they're working on. So
and I, you know, IT over at the jail and their deputies' terminals in there, that's all got to be updated. Everything's constantly in motion in IT.
Making sure that people are just being patient with the time that it takes for us to manage this thing.
Yep. So. Okay, moving down to C1 is public health. Lease with Illinois Valley Family Coalition for use of office space by Josephine County Public Health Department at 535 East River Street in Cave Junction. Mr. Weber, thank you.
Morning, Commissioners. So this should be pretty quick and easy, and I have a couple sideline topics to address real quick. So as you know, our Cave Junction facility, the county's Cave Junction facility, got sold.
We may have heard a rumor about that.
Yeah. Well, we've been sort of squatting in the space per lease agreement, but we've had some trouble recently because they're modifying the space for use as a thrift store, and it's impeding on space usage, and it's just a challenging location. So we evaluated three locations. One was outside the city, which is difficult because a lot of the population that we serve are underprivileged, and a lot of them don't have vehicles. So we... kind of brush that one aside. We contemplated staying in the current space, but again, space usage conflicts was a challenge. The Illinois Valley Family Coalition facility, which is right up the road from where we currently are, we decided was probably the best space. They're charging $70 more a month than what we were paying in the old facility. But with that, we get two rooms to use for clinic space, which we'll start attending more frequently. We get full use of all of their conference spaces for WIC client engagement. And quite frankly, they're just better fit. They have a lot of existing services already provided. So we can start providing more services to our clients without us actually being the ones to provide them. Things like resume development and dental services and UCAN, DHS, there's a lot of facilities housed in the same location. So
probably key to mention that had you stayed in the same place, the rent that they were asking had more than doubled.
Yes.
So this is about a $300 a month savings from what the staying in the county, well, former county building, they were going to be asking.
Well, yeah, we're going to see that anywhere. Any one of our departments says, you know, I'm paying too much in facilities at 65 cents a square foot. Go try to find someplace else in the real market, and you're going to pay double at a starting point. So I don't know that all of our programs understand the deal that they get until they start looking for someplace else or have a new owner of the building.
Yes. So.
And at a cost of just over $5,000 a year, this is something that could have been just decided at a department head level. We wanted to make sure you guys were aware because of it, you know, the being tied to the last one.
A board decision from a property standpoint. So even at the fiscal level, I don't think we don't have a lease of any program that doesn't go through us at this point.
Okay. Legal advised otherwise. And we said to still bring it here, so.
Yeah, I got conflicting advice, and I figure I better err on the side of caution.
I can't think of a place that we are, so that would be, I can't think of, and having been the property liaison for 7 years, of a lease agreement where the county's got a space that the board didn't come into play on at some point. It just seems consistent that we would know a space that we occupy, because I think there's a lot of times few people who have a holistic view of our properties other than facilities and maybe the board who understands, oh, well, you know, for veterans, well, we've got this spot over here that could work for you as opposed to them going out into the private world and trying to find something. So that's the policy as I understand it. So I could be wrong.
Well, honestly, on the space, we're slotted to move in ahead of time. They've already agreed pending your signature. So
yeah. I think this is where we wanted to go. It didn't really make sense in the facility that you were at, and then having to go between a different one. I thought you were doing something at the library once a month as well.
That's still the case.
It's fine.
We're going to meet with the library and see if that's still appropriate.
Probably we'll just broadening the client opportunity, you know, but at the same time, really always when I talk to the people at the coalition, they just thought, we'd love to have you. It just round peg, round hole dovetails really well. And I thought,
The mirroring of services is fantastic.
Yeah, excellent.
We're always looking for ways we can expand services provided to our client without us actually having to provide them.
What's the other spot, the clinic out there? Because that's not in the city limits, if I'm right.
Yeah, the spot that we evaluated.
It does kind of dovetail from a public health standpoint, but it may not be the same style of stuff as the coalition is providing.
It would have worked well for the Women's Health Clinic, but having WIC and the Women's Health Clinic in the same location makes sense. And like I said, transportation is a big deal.
Yeah.
Here in Grants Pass, we can get shuttles that can bring WIC clients up to the Public Health Center because we don't have busing service up there. But we don't have that option in Cave Junction. So anyone who doesn't have a vehicle suddenly loses access to baby formula.
Okay.
It sounds to me like you, as you've just come on board here and you've done a pretty good job on this thing. This is fantastic. You looked at all the options and this is the best fit for you at a cost of $7 more a month than what we're doing. And as Commissioner Morgan said, it was getting ready to go up $300 a month. So we're doing pretty good there. Any problem with moving this forward? The weekly business session, would you like, Mr. Weber, would you like to come and give a presentation on that? The weekly business session next Wednesday, or
I don't think it's necessary.
I think
but
one
if
of us
like.
Can speak to it.
Yeah, I was going
to
say if
we'd like to keep high dollar managers on situations where it's.
I'm just to get him back in.
Easily cover.
Get him back into the traces. He's doing a good job there.
So. Most of it's a public health thing. So Commissioner Morgan.
So Commissioner Morgan, you
espouse the highlights of the positives.
On a sideline issue that I wanted to bring up, just for your awareness, it'll be coming to you. I don't know when. I'll work with Commissioner Morgan to figure out exactly when all three of you can be in one space at one time. But we'll be looking at declaring an epidemic for influenza.
Right.
And the purpose of this is to allow a shift in policy on how we engage first responders with flu calls. Right now, the spread of flu influenza within fire has been very significant. That we were discussing it yesterday at the EMS Advisory Board. And back in the H1N1 days, they had an alternate approach to how they would engage. And we'd like to implement that same policy. That's a short term.
Aren't they taking standard precautionary procedures of wearing a mask potentially or something? And
yes, I mean, and no, but so there's only so much that can
maybe
do.
I'm misunderstanding.
It actually allows them not to respond unless it's actually life critical situations.
So my
we're minimizing engagement, which is key.
Like first responders in the fire realm are getting exposed to influenza.
And passing on to other homes on other calls as well.
Okay.
And bring it home to their kid, to the school. And
yeah.
Yeah, it ultimately what happens is somebody calls 911, I feel terrible, you know, I have these symptoms, and, you know, down Cape Junction, it may be 45 minutes before we're going to be able to get an ambulance there. So fire department goes, and you have three firefighters show up, engage with the patient, sit with them, even with a mask, because not 100%.
All over. Yeah.
And then
you're in the home.
EMS shows up and provides additional engagement. And all of a sudden you have six, seven or more people engaging with a person who just has the flu.
They are implementing precautionary issues as well. Not only masks for the first response. Full on sealed.
Right.
But they also, unless the patient needs oxygen or respiratory help in the transport, they're putting a mask on the patient as well as they're transporting. But they did have a protocol in place that was similar to this situation. A significant report that came out yesterday is there's not an ICU bed available in Oregon or Washington. And I've heard that California is not far behind. So it's at the level of if we can reduce exposure, it will help
it,
systemically.
Reduce contact. That's your number one reduction tool. I mean, and one of the things that's frustrating me is I'm finding there's a very large misunderstanding of just how dangerous the flu is.
Right.
This is a very bad year. And on a normal year throughout the country, there's about 36,000 deaths from the flu. And, you know, when we have, in fact, there was an article printed yesterday, I believe in the Washington Post, might have been the New York Times, about a healthy 21-year-old who tried to fight through the flu and wound up dying from it.
Because it can impede your immune system, which makes you subject to stuff like pneumonia or something, because a friend of mine just said that her dad is in the hospital in ICU, and he's there because of pneumonia, and he's in his 50s, and it may or may not have started with the flu, and then he contracted because he didn't.
Can make you more susceptible, but even just the flu itself.
Yeah.
It is dangerous. People think of it as, people get the cold and they go, well, I had the flu, I was sick for 2 days. You did not have the flu.
Right.
Also, we have incredibly low rates of vaccination for everything, but influenza in particular in this county, even within our emergency services groups. So.
Okay, well, whatever we can
I'll be
help.
Presenting that. We'll be getting in front of the board shortly.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Weber. We all set on that. We're going to move that forward.
Sounds good.
Perfect.
Right.
At this point in time, Julie, I see you're here. You're on again at 11 o'clock. If you'd like to, come back at 11, I think that's okay. It's only an hour, I know, but
sure.
You know,
I have stuff on the agenda here too, though.
Do you? Do you want to put it all onto your 11 o'clock?
I don't know if I can because my quarterly report is on this agenda.
That's what I mean. If you want to take the quarterly report at 11,
doesn't matter. Actually, we can move it to that
because we'd like to be done here before 11.
We probably should have structured it that way. It's redundant, and you would have had an extra 2 hours as opposed to. So, one of those things to look at the beginning, it's up to you.
No, I'll go.
I'll see you at 11. Okay, thank you.
If Arthur were here, I think I could ask him about the lease. I'm not so sure that that's necessarily it needs to go to a weekly business session to the lease agreement. Technically, it's an administrative item. It's a new thing. We've never done it before. It's not a continuation. And
in this particular instance, they're moving out of a building that was sold. So it's kind of nice to know where they're
that's
going.
That's already in this.
We've already discussed this. It's been predetermined.
Going to happen. This was the next step. When we sold the building, we worked out that they would have a 6-month extension to find a new place.
Correct.
So this is just simply that next step of they found that next place.
So do you want to leave that with the liaison rather than bring that before the whole board?
Well, I think it's something the lease agreements usually are signed by the full board, and I'm almost 100% confident in that. I can't find myself an error. I can't think of an error of where lease agreements don't get signed by the full board. Arthur, can you think of an example of where we don't have that? I don't think I've ever signed one, and a facilities liaison, you'd think I'd done that. So anyway, I think we could just do it here. If there's no objection, okay. That we have...
Not moving forward to the weekly business session?
Yeah, I don't think we need to. It's more administrative. There's no change in policy. It does have a fiscal impact, but like Commissioner Morgan said, this was part of the plan.
It was part of the original scope sold it, of that change anyway. So you're saying we just sign it, we don't need it?
We can do it just here. I would make a motion to approve item 1C, which is lease with the Illinois Valley Family Coalition for use of office space by Josephine County Public Health Department at 535 East River Street.
I'll second that.
All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. Well, then we'll strike that from the weekly business session and we'll just sign it and be done with it. Thank you very much. Next up, item D1 is human resource, a request for a job description change in public health.
Good morning, Commissioners. Well, I have the job prepared. I normally would send it earlier, but there was a last-minute research I had to do to finalize a couple of things. So this is for a revision of an existing position. So it's for a... We had a WIC supervisor position in the budget.
Yeah. Doubles. Thank you, sir.
And the way WIC works... as it relates to supervision, is there's a couple models that you can employ in how you deal with the nutrition aspect of WIC. The way we currently do it is we contract the nutrition services out to a dietitian. They're part-time employees. They're actually partially do work under us and partially do work under All Care, and that model works. The other option is to have an employee who is classified as a WIC coordinator. That's a state title. Do those services, and they don't have to be a dietitian, but you need a dietitian to look over the services. So in talking to Director Weber, what he would like to do is something that's similar in a lot of counties where you have a position that has either option. So if you have a dietitian who can do it, you have them the coordinator do dietary stuff as well as the supervision of WIC. That particular position is incredibly challenging to find. It's one of those valuable positions. There's not a lot of dietitians available, and if you can't find it, you have the first tier of the position, which is just WIC supervisor. So they still supervise the WIC, but they're not a registered dietitian. And
the program goes on because you don't have a if you don't have a dietitian, the program still you're not up against the wall.
WIC wants you to have one. They allow you to have an RN do those services on a temporary basis until you can find a dietitian. We classified as temporary for a pretty lengthy time. It took us like 2.5 years to find a dietitian. And so we were on the naughty list with WIC because we couldn't find one. Eventually we did, and so now we have one. As it relates to the potential RFP outsourcing, whether it's outsourced or not, this position is valuable because if you outsource this and you have a dietitian in it, it's a valuable commodity that people are interested in. And if you choose not to outsource, it's still valuable because it allows you to have the flexibility to run the program better.
And this is one of the things that we've been working with Oregon Health Authority staff throughout this whole process, mm-hmm. and this is one of the concepts that they had suggested that other communities have done that has been very successful for them as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Commissioner Hare, do you have anything on this one at all?
No.
Okay, and you're in favor?
Yes.
We'll move this one forward to the weekly business session. JJ, will you be there to speak on this?
Sure.
I think it'd be good for you to be there.
You have a knack for succinctly.
Sometimes we've left job descriptions, brought into the board, but facilitating those through the liaison, and I'm okay with this one. I think
it's an existing position that's just a change of position titles of sorts.
Often that's under consent.
Yeah, or we just delegate that to the liaison to facilitate after we've been briefed. I'm fine with that.
Belabor the WBS.
Yeah, bog the weekly business session.
So we'll take it off of the weekly business session, and as the liaison, you'll handle that. Commissioner Morgan?
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, JJ.
So there's been a couple of things. If you Will, Mr. Chair, that have come up that are probably just clarification points. I think it would be advantageous for us over this next year, I'm here, to kind of codify these things, maybe by order or a policy manual for the board. And so Wendy and I, with your approval, will start working on something like that.
Okay.
Just kind of like, well, this is the way we've always done it, and I know that. I could think of an example. Rob Brandis has some properties that I believe he's worked out those lease agreements on his own in his program that are under the jurisdiction of Public Works. And I've always had a challenge with that, and so did Rosemary when she was here, about those not going through the full board. And one of the reasons is because there's liability on behalf of us for having that property, and then if we're not aware of it, it may not be being used to the best and highest use, but we've got liability with it. So I think it makes sense, and I'll work with legal, and, you know, we don't have a property manager right now, but just exploring the idea that we would be responsible for property transactions of the county.
Well, I have no problem with, like, these two items that we just scratched off. Coming to the board, explaining everything, and then going from there.
Delegating it
to a liaison to follow up.
Knows,
I like that. I think we get the full information,
absolutely.
And then we can work out the easiest route.
And any of us have a question for the presenter, we can do that directly because you had some questions.
Yeah.
So on and so forth.
And there might be a threshold of, like, where it makes sense that the liaison can deal with small lease agreements like that. But then there's, you know, sales of properties or something like that that, no, full board needs to.
Okay.
But they're John Hancock on those kind of things. So we'll work that out and get it codified by board order so that we
D1 will not be moved to the weekly business session. Let's move on to 3, the quarterly department updates. 3A is community development. They are excused till 11 o'clock later on this morning. Next up is 3B, fairgrounds. And on their agenda is resolution number 2018-001 in the matter of appointment to the Josephine County Fair Board.
Hey, congratulations. You're our first resolution of the year.
Yeah.
We're the what?
First resolution of the year.
Oh, wonderful.
Yep. 001. That's great.
And I agree. You should know all about the leases.
Fair manager Peggy Anderson, and along with her is Mary Groves.
You're getting into trouble. Later.
Good morning, commissioners.
We didn't know.
Well, I know you're all on ours, so. Anyway, good morning.
Good morning.
I invited Mary to come with me today. We've got some things to talk to you about finances a little bit and about grants and what's happening. As you all know, you know, we are the recipient of the Duck Derby money for the next 3 years, and that's very, very exciting for us. We are in the first year, it'll be 75% of the money, which would equal somewhere around $50,000 to $55,000. The second year and third year, it's 100% of the Duck Derby money. And they traditionally, it's around $75,000. It could be more and it could be a little bit less, but they figure 75 is a real safe amount that they fund out every year. So we were really excited about that. Mary and I went and presented to them on the 18th of December, and by that night I actually had a phone call. So it was a beautiful thing. So there had been a couple people on that committee for a lot of years that were a little hesitant of giving it to the county. They felt like we were really going in the right direction. And being very transparent at the fairgrounds, and they really felt like we were headed in the right direction, so they've awarded us that money. And but one of the things that they, in front of you, you see your packet with just some fairgrounds milestones, but when we did our presentation, the one thing that they did not know was they really didn't have a firm grasp of how many people really use the facilities every year. And we can go back and exactly pinpoint. When we say that it's about 200,000 people a year, we know that it's right at 200,000. It could be a little bit more. For example, every morning you see people coming and going out of the gates. We're not counting those people. We don't have a way to count those people. If they're coming in to feed, if they're coming in just to see what's going on in the fairgrounds, and those are not in our counts. These are actual counts of people that are using the facilities of actual events, and so we count them off the events.
One thing that I think we've learned recently is that be careful with exact numbers, because somebody's probably out there going to say, where did you get that?
Mm-hmm.
And want you to prove that.
Oh,
so that's, you know, when you start.
We've got that.
Well, as long as we make sure, because you throw out the number of 200,000 people, they go, what were their names? Because that's, you know, that's kind of, you know, people are, they're skeptical. They've always been skeptical of government.
Sometimes it's easy to poke holes in statistics. I mean, we take in more sometimes. We're going to round up if we have that. So it's just,
Just make sure that you err on the side of.
You know, at some point, somebody probably intersects the fairgrounds in some fashion for some event. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe almost everybody in Josephine County.
But we're not going to pay $65,000 for somebody set out there with a clicker counting people.
No, we're not. But that leads into we're working very hard on the master plan. You've seen it; it's been in the newspaper. They're giving us actually really good coverage. Last Saturday, we had approximately 40 people attend that meeting, and those 40 people were all over the board. They were not normally people, most of them, that we normally see. And so most of them have been involved with the fairgrounds one way or the other, and we're very supportive of what's going on. There are those that are there that are very skeptical about what's going on, so it was a great mix. The one thing I was really pleased to see is that we had two of the city council members there, and they have been there continually through these meetings. And so that is a good thing, because we really feel like they really are our partners. We're sitting right in the middle of the city of Grants Pass, and I think that we need to continue with that good relationship that we've got with them. The master plan committee, when they met, they divided off into four different areas. They went into facilities, which Mary actually is part of that group, the arena and the equestrian, the master plan group, and then telling our story, because this telling our story is what we have not done well enough. And so we're really, really working on that piece of it. They went off. They all have looked a little bit at the map. I had the department downstairs pull up a map of the county property that's actually involved on the fairgrounds. And so they actually had looked at that piece of it. And just to determine exactly what property are we actually looking at. And that is one thing we need to be sure that everybody, that we understand what your need is as well from the commissioner's side.
I think that's something that is a starting point that we frankly haven't had yet, mm-hmm. as far as making a distinction about, you know, potential future plans that the community may not have, not just the board, but that, you know, that's one piece of the puzzle. It's a great place to start, but there could be something out there that says, well, maybe we need to utilize the horse barn area in a more efficient manner, mm-hmm. for something that dovetails with what we would do with public works and a relocation kind of a thing. And it says, oh, well, we hadn't evaluated the tangential use of that horse stall area for how it could work into whatever we do at public works, and say, yeah, that's probably a better and higher use than what we're using for the horse stalls. Or we could put the new horse stalls over there if we utilize that in the proximity to the river. I just want the fair board to understand that there's also context about where the fair is.
Right.
So I'm 100% supporter of the fair staying where it is. It doesn't make any practical sense, and it's frankly probably against the law to move it, because there isn't a zone that'll accommodate the fairgrounds anywhere else in a zoning element. So it is where it is. But is the whole footprint going to be that?
It may not be.
Still in conversation.
I agree. And with the board being tasked with the opportunity to look at everything, it's not fair to say, okay, you need to look over here, when we know truly that that's never going to happen over into an area.
Right.
And so I think it's really important that you all have the conversation as well, so we are sure that we're working where you want it to be.
I think that my perspective is that you evaluate the footprint that you currently have to the best and highest use of what you're using it now. And then that is a perfect thing to gauge against with any other proposal that would come out and say, well, we would like to use that space for this. Well, the fair board has got an idea of using it for this. We're comparing apples and apples at that point, and we actually have something to compare, because we know what you want to do with that and how it fits into your big picture. So I think you're doing the right thing, you know, strategy-wise, how it all plays out. It's perfect.
And working with the city is imperative in this whole piece that we're doing. And I think with the city councilors that have come on board and are really willing to work with us and help us, actually, Rick Riker has offered, and he was on the county planning for years and years and on his own with land use stuff. He's actually offered to help with the arena, some of the things, some of the designs and things that we're talking about doing. So
the one thing that pops out, it jumps right out at me is the District 7 school property that's just a great big... Three Rivers school property. Is that a conversation we would have with the school board? Mm-hmm. And just say, you know...
Starts with the superintendent.
Let's take a look at the possibility of either trading them some land, maybe, for buses, or letting them utilize land they already have. I know they've got the activity field that I don't know how much well it's used. It's with right next to Three Rivers School's admin building out there.
Honestly, District 7's new facility, as I understand it, has capacity for... I mean, that's 2 acres. It's not that big.
Yeah.
They're crammed
in there.
They
could consolidate over on the end. At the same location where other buses are being serviced.
Yeah.
And I don't know about whose contract that is with, but it just makes sense that you kind of put things in the...
I think what always bothered me about their facility out there and the amount of buses they have is that one of the busiest intersections, or probably the
safety,
least coordinated intersection, is that Ringette intersection out there. And when you pilot, it looks like probably 15, maybe 20 buses in through that, maneuver them through that intersection at the busiest times of day. If we can get that away from there, I think that would be... there's more value in that land than parking buses on it.
I think we have a good place to start. You won't want to start here politically, but
no.
They don't actually have very good access to Ringette.
No, they don't.
The only place, they have an easement on the back of the 4-H building that is really not compatible for moving buses. So
if we did something else around them...
through our property. And at what point we say, it's not working out for you to have access, we're going to build a building there, we're going to take all of that out.
Yeah.
It's we will work together mutually to find a place, and I think I'd be happy to do that conversation. The other conversation is that they are leading to the, and I just toured it last Friday, degrading that parking lot for Fruit and Friends, but 4-H and stuff. It's in 4-H's thing, contract to do a certain percentage. I think it's 10-20%. Of general maintenance costs out there. They have it in their budget this year to do that. We've kind of lost traction with Mike Watson leaving that conversation about what it's going to take to maintain that. But that's another challenge that they need to be aware of, that it's not free to keep accessing it through our property. So,
well, there's just a certain amount of entities out there that I think need to be thinking along the line.
Yeah.
Just kind of thinking along the line, I think we have a real excitement going on the fair board and actually redoing that whole section of town, the city and Grant Pass and the county, kind of going to work jointly on this, and a lot of entities that are going to throw into it. I went out to the meeting the other day, and I was really surprised there was a lot of people there.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good meeting, and when they split off into the groups, people didn't, say, well, no, I'm not going to get involved in that. They were right there to get into the groups and engage, so that's really good. But
one of the other things I think we need to look at is consolidating lot lines, property lines and stuff. Cleaning up in general, you'll see that we didn't do lot line adjustments when we did the Allen Creek intersection there at Redwood Avenue.
Okay.
I've talked to Rob Brandis about that briefly, but it's outlined in red. Yeah, that's county-owned properties, but it's really not available to the fairgrounds to kind of look at from a... It's not available the same way it was before because of that new entrance, that new road around there, and who is in jurisdiction of those properties now may or may not stay the same,
right.
And seeing who needs to be responsible for those. So,
well, that needs to come up, Peggy, with the new piece, with what's left over from the old BMX track.
Yeah.
You want to tell them what about horse racing?
Oh, horse, when we had an equestrian meeting on... We had our big meeting on Saturday, and by Tuesday night, the horse people were back together talking about that and looking at this. And they were actually having a conversation because up in the corner where I've kind of scribbled around where that's not in our territory, there is the livestock barn right up there that they, and the outdoor arena that they use, and they tie up from the 1st of May until the middle of July, and they're right in the middle of my midway.
Yeah.
And they've got trailers and all kinds of things. And they said, maybe we could actually take and where the old Pansy Lane...
Between Flower and Pansy?
Yeah, between Flower and Pansy, where that area is that would be to the north of the Allen Creek. They said maybe we could set up portable stalls there and go right into the chute part of the horse racetrack.
Sure.
So, they had brought that up.
and we're just in the process of putting together
They would be allowed to park over in the parking lot north of the BMX track? Would that give them parking?
No, they wouldn't be able to park there.
Okay.
But they'd have stalls, portable stalls.
They'll have stalls in between Flower and Pansy. Is there enough room on Flower and Pansy to park?
Maybe a little bit, but not an awful lot.
Well, you said that when they're over here at the livestock barns,
yeah, they're down
they have
the
all
midway.
Kinds of trailers and stuff on
they
the
do.
Midway.
And it's hard
can
to get
it
through.
Move over there?
Some of it can. They may have to reconfigure back behind the barns a little bit. We're all going to have to look at the best usage
of the
grounds. The
nice thing is you have a liaison to Fair and Public Works. So
right, and Public Works is great to work
that'd
with.
That would be the jurisdiction for you to work out.
Okay, we'll talk.
And we're working on their contract right now. And
do the utilities, so you know.
Yeah, the utilities have never been included in with their rent.
It seems like they've been getting a heck of a deal. And I think originally when we negotiated that some 3 years ago, it was really because it was they were on the verge of not doing it anymore. And, I mean, even at that first year, they were really successful. Mm-hmm. I don't exactly know how successful, but I think that it's important that we start assigning true costs to these agreements and that they're... It's actually a bad precedent that people get let in for less than cost.
It is.
And it gives them the wrong impression that's what it costs, and it isn't, because there's opportunity costs that you're losing revenue to other people because they're encumbering such a large footprint of the fairgrounds.
And it's for such a long period of time.
Yeah.
Their utilities, I finally did a cost analysis on their utility bill in 2015 was $78.95. No. 2016, it was $9,900, and in 2017, it was $11,206. And we have got to claim that back. We have to have the utilities back.
We have always felt that way, and it's just been a challenge of the Fair Board.
Well, cumulatively, you've given them $30,000 grace. So
more than that. If you actually figure out what your real costs would be, mm-hmm. and I did, just to show them at one point, it's like $96,000 is what we should be charging them for the 3 months that they're there for all the facilities that they have in use. So, I mean, they've been getting a super deal. So that really does need to be addressed.
Having hard costs is really key, because they're going to feel like, no, that's not what it could be, or blah, blah, blah. Well, no.
And there's a reason the fairgrounds doesn't do the horse racing piece anymore. It's expensive.
Yes.
Okay.
So, and then Commissioner DeYoung and I met with YMCA the other day, too, just to talk a little bit about the parking lot. We're having some issues moving in there with commercial trucks, just pulling in the middle of the night, blocking access, and being in the middle of that lot. And so we've come up with, I've talked to Kevin, and Commissioner DeYoung and I talked with Kevin, and we've come up with a plan to put an actual banner on the back side of the fence on both sides that said no overnight parking. And, you know, we're... see the fair office properties of Josephine County Fairgrounds.
Sure.
So we've got to address that, because once you get a commercial truck in there, we notice that once you get one, all of a sudden I got six in there.
Yeah, they think it's...
And it's getting more so.
The problem is that there's been other places in the city that are not allowing it anymore, but one of the other things is that you're taking away potential business from private enterprises. I know the J Street area, but not just Copeland's, they mm-hmm. lease out space to truckers to park there.
Well, they do.
Overnight, yeah. Well, you see all those trucks Copeland in there
does?
Are not Copeland's trucks.
But Copeland does that?
Yeah.
So I could put that in the letter that we're going to put on these trucks.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're leasing it to somebody because
Copeland
they do
does,
not...
Copeland does, and R&M has all their trucks down there.
I'm sure that there's... So the other thing is that we have an obligation to not compete with private enterprise and undercut them. So
Well, they're not paying anything. I mean, they just show up.
That's my point. So if there is a free alternative provided by the public, that's not appropriate, because we're undercutting the private sector who might be charging them. I know that there's some property on M Street that could accommodate some large trucks overnight and stuff. They would love that revenue stream of just having somebody parking on their parking lot overnight. And so we need to... It's not just a heavy-handed element. It's also...
That'd be something you could put on your... You could put on... If you're going to put something on the windshield, say you can't park here anymore, but this is an alternative, and give them Copeland's phone number.
And the nice thing is that YMCA is offering to go out and put them on there at nighttime when they show up, too, when they get ready to leave.
Another thing that YMCA, they had a concern or a request that where you're allowed in and out, is right now you to get out of that parking lot, you've got to go to in queue for that little horseshoe to come mm-hmm. back on. They would like to move that entrance down so that you would exit there and have to use the Allen Creek intersection, which is, I think, a little bit more suited for traffic. Either that or go out the end of the parking lot, the west end of the parking lot, take that curve through Allen Creek Road system to get back on the Redwood Highway. That's a real short, quick jaunt across to get the little horseshoe thing there at Redwood and Redwood Highway and Redwood Avenue. And plus, especially if you've got any kind of trailer or anything, it's hard to get in and out of there. So that's something to just kind of consider in the future.
That's what they've been talking about. The last thing that I've got, and we'll turn it to Mary real quick, is that we've started with an advertising campaign in the Courier, and it's on Tuesdays. It'll just be called Do You Know? And it's very cost-effective for a pretty good-sized ad because of where it's at. And the first one came out this Tuesday, and I don't know if you saw it, but it was about all the equestrian teams that use the facilities and how many people are coming through the grounds. Yep. Anyway, I'm going to turn it right over to Mary.
Okay, so I have re-engaged with this the indoor arena now, especially since we were able to get approximately $200,000 over the next 3 years to go toward fixing that arena up. One of the things that I really need to do is go after some of the other funds that could be available out there from the funding companies or the funding funders like the Ford Foundation. I did have a conversation with the gal at Ford, and I have the $200,000 that are technically committed funds, and I have some other posse's got $6,000, and we can do some in-kind things. As soon as I have up to $250,000, which is half of the project, it's about $504,000 is what the budget is right now. That doesn't fix everything, but it brings it up, puts a roof on it, and brings the understructure up, puts ADA restrooms. And one of the people that was on this facilities committee came up with a great idea. I thought where the restrooms are right now that are on the midway, that would be a great place for ADA restrooms. And then she said, why don't we put some other restrooms just down in the little gully, which used to be the old gulch thing. Underneath the seating down there, there's room to put a couple of other restrooms. So we would have ADA and regular public restrooms under that building that would be up to grade and up to code, and I think we can do that.
Speaking of grade, you need to shoot the grade to see if the sewer down deep enough. As you go down into that hole, we don't put a pumping station.
I actually have a map of the sewer, where the sewer lines and stuff are, and Ryan is pretty well aware of where all that stuff is as well. And we want to meet with Ryan. Well, he wasn't available for the meeting that we had the other day. But one of the things that I need to be able to do is, once I get this up to $250,000 of committed funds, I can go to the Ford Foundation, and they will actually look at funding up to a third, which would be another $150,000, of the project. So it's important that I get to them as soon as I can. So what I'd really like to do is to be able to get a letter from Finance Arthur or someone that we would have up to at least $50,000, maybe $70,000 or $80,000 committed toward that project from the building, from the county building fund. So I need to get that in the process. And we're also going to talk to Julie about some economic development money. I don't know how much of that's available. We haven't been able to meet with her. We're meeting with her next week. But I'd like to get, some commitment up over that $250,000 threshold so I go ahead and write to the Ford Foundation and get that into the queue.
I talked to Kate yesterday, Jackson, I think is her name, from Ashland. We were out on our tour, and she said,
DEQ?
DEQ?
Kate Jackson from DEQ?
And we were talking, and she was asking what was going on with the fairgrounds, and I explained, the Rotary grant and, mm-hmm. and that Ford was in. She says, you really need to talk to Business Oregon because they have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And that might be a slot that you can fill that void with. She said they've got an awful lot of stuff going on over their business work, and we should be involved in it. Be a good relationship to make.
Okay.
Our facilities reserve, I'm just going to give you my take on it, is at a lower level than I think it should be. We don't have a set number on where it is, but it's below where I would like it to be comfortably. And Fairground is not paid in on that facility, and so it's really hard. Usually we'll do loans.
We have for the last 5 years.
Not specifically on that building. You do
not on that particular
work to be right. done at the fairgrounds, and that's different than depreciation that we charge per square foot. That's where the money basically comes from for our property reserve. So just my take on it is that should be the last place that you try to apply for is the facilities reserve. Economic development.
I'd rather get it from economic development. If
it's certainly within the confines, the parameters of what that's mm-hmm. supposed to be intended for, as a statutorily provided for department that could use those funds. So I'm just telling you where my position is, okay. only one. But facilities should be the last place that you think
about.
Well,
and I'd rather not. And
yes.
If we can't get money available through the economic development or for some reason that doesn't work.
Let's look under every rock.
Let's look at, I'm looking at that rock. But so I just want you to know.
Where I would see facilities coming in is not just even last dollar for where your portfolio of funding comes. It comes from, and I'm just saying this and maybe I'll regret it, but if you're going to have change orders, you're going to have things that you didn't know about that are mm-hmm. going to cost you more than you thought they were. And that in an old building could be 30% of your potential costs. I'm just throwing out a number based on other projects that we've had. When you start peeling back this onion and you find out, oh my gosh, I didn't know about, that's where it should be like a crisis, an emergency element.
That's where you go to facilities.
That's what I'd go to.
I think what you're looking for right now is a letter of intent.
I need a letter of commitment that there's funds available if we need to use them.
Right. And that letter.
I'm not sure I can do that with facilities.
Okay, so right. We'll try the economic development
yes.
route first.
And
that was
and the business Oregon.
And try business Oregon too. She was Kate was pretty. She was pretty emphatic. She said, "This is who you need to go talk to." So.
Okay, I've not had any business.
We've already talked to talked to Blue Sky too. They've come and actually assessed part of the fairgrounds as a whole
mm-hmm.
in that arena. They have looked at the lighting and things in there already.
Cool.
They've got some things. On
Energy
there.
Trust of Oregon
Energy.
Should be
right.
on that list.
Well,
it's
part of that.
We
it's
had
part
the
of Blue
T8
Sky.
Were put in that building. The lighting was upgraded in that building.
I remember.
Yes.
But they also, I mean, they're looking at some new projects that potentially. They're talking about community solar. And I know that your floral building has solar on it.
Mm-hmm.
But they've talked about how some houses, some properties aren't able to have solar because of location or tree coverage or this and that. So what they're doing is finding a sponsor that would hold the solar and others can buy into it. And so there's some other partnerships in there that may be available that Energy Trust brought up at the BRNE meeting on Tuesday. And I can get some contact information for Karen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So is that good to go? Any other questions for the fair?
I would say I would want to hear from economic development first and then, you know, kind of see where we're at.
We'll meet with her next week. So.
Okay, the other thing that I just want to keep you informed on, and I just got the first kind of dollars with it, you know, the commercial kitchen in the pavilion is not a true commercial kitchen. It's actually a very outdated warming kitchen. And so I got the first bids back from a restaurant business, Curtis Restaurants in Medford. And I said, barring the dishwasher, what would it cost to do everything else in that thing with some new appliances and, you know, new refrigeration, new, you know, what make it a commercial kitchen? It's $88,000 right now.
Are you kidding?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
That's with the new kind of arrangement, you know.
You know, it's crazy. There was a bunch of Craigslist ads that some restaurant went out of business, and they were giving their restaurant equipment away on Craigslist. I didn't even think about it.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, it was incredible. It was crazy. Like, this stuff was high-end dollar ranges.
And it's got to go
commercial
now.
Commercial kitchens. Oh, it's gone. Somebody
I'm sure
bought it.
Picked it right up or one of the...
They knew what it was worth, and that's
exactly.
already gone.
And you may end up throwing 40% of that away, but there may be 60% you could use.
It looked good.
Well, what I needed was, what does it cost? Pie in the sky.
Right.
And then I can go to the funders again and say, okay, well, you know, can I get $20,000 here, can I get $15,000, $5,000, whatever. These are going to be the smaller kind of grants that I'll be writing for.
So we have people in the community that actually are looking for a commercial kitchen.
Belt Building got funding a couple of years ago, the Kirby Belt Building, for an upgrade in their kitchen to turn it into a commercial kitchen so people could go in there and, you know, can their horseradish
mm-hmm.
or stuff
right.
like that. And it had a business element to it. And that that's what I would see a very good use of economic development dollars for, almost better than the building of the arena. I see the economic development, but it's how is it creating jobs? And that would be potentially a very, it's like the CET program, right? Is that what it's called? Of integrating that element into our community. And you might dovetail with what RCC is trying to do with their program over there.
Okay. And so, on the area of importance, that was brought up at the meeting on Saturday, I think by one or two people, was the fact that we didn't have a commercial kitchen, a qualifying or certified commercial kitchen.
It's not certified.
And there would be a lot of events that could be there rather than just a warming kitchen. Every big event is going to need that kitchen to get the thing started.
I can tell you that the covered arena building is going to be a 2 to 3 year project before we get everything done because everything moves so slowly. And the commercial kitchen will be the same by the time you get funds and money. So, you know, we may need economic development money to get this one moving, and possibly next year we're going to be asking for something else.
Next is, in fact, this is one of the things, is B1 is a resolution 2018-001 in the matter of appointment of Josephine County Fair Board. We need your input on that.
They provided it.
Yeah. Okay. There's a recommendation.
I've got everything in here.
For Robert Nelson and Jennifer McGowan.
Do you have a recommendation for Robert Nelson and Jennifer McGowan?
That's correct.
Okay.
I would support that. I've seen at least Jennifer and the work that she does out there, and she's a worker. And I think that energy would be beneficial on the Fair Board.
Jennifer, for me, she's going to compete against any applicant. I think it's important that the board understand that it's our decision, and you don't have any.
That's right.
You understand that.
I do.
I'm not sure we always understand. The point that I make in that is that there's an existing board member, committee member, that is reapplying, and so we need to be conscious of the fact that there is. I have understood that there's reasons why that may not be the best interest of the Fair Board to have that person from an attendance standpoint and engagement. It doesn't transcend the issue that is important to them, is what I've understood. And I don't need to belabor the subject, but there is a justification as to why there wasn't a reauthorization of that person, a reappointment. The other consideration is that I'd like to see the makeup of the existing Fair Board so that we make sure that we've got balance with the perspectives that's being reappointed or appointed. Because there's another applicant that I just saw, and usually we have evaluation sheets sometimes that we can get the list of everybody who applied. And Ms. Thomason has a long history with the Fair, 4-H Extension, and other community projects. And I didn't look at that in an evaluation. You know, Jennifer's, like you said, very, very, that's a given. She's great. But I don't know Mr. Nelson, but I do know Ms. Thomason. And so trying to look at the makeup of the Fair Board to say, well, we've already got three horse people, so to speak. I don't know.
Yeah,
it may not
know.
Be the
we
case.
Know. We know.
But then we'd have Mr. Nelson, who's specifically put on his application. He's interested pretty much just in horse racing or horses from that standpoint. That's what he said on his application. I'm sure he has broader interests in the whole success of the fairgrounds. That's what I wanted to look at. So I'm comfortable with Jennifer, but I'm needing to look at the whole group and what the current makeup of the Fair Board is.
Going forward next year, do we have any openings next year? Because I've had a couple of people that said, gee, should I apply for the Fair Board? And I think there's a couple coming up next year.
There are. Part of it, too, is Ms. Thomason's application just came in last week. So
correct. That wasn't even in the mix.
All being evaluated. This just came in as a last thing. It was kind of already reviewed, and it's like, okay, well, we'll hold this for the next one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, was part of what happened with that. Not
I told
because
the other person. I said there will be more openings available in the future.
There is. There's like four that'll come due all at the same time.
Right.
That'll be coming up in the next year.
Yeah, next year is a pretty good opening. Opportunity at that time, and I told her the same thing. I says, you know, don't do it this year, but wait till next year.
The one of the reasons on Mr. Nelson that was very attractive is that he's already been part of the Red Bluff Fair Board. He's been on a fair board, yeah. And he's been on the Chamber of Commerce, and he's got a pretty good handle on what's coming in the community, on the horse end of it. And yeah. We don't have anyone on the fair board. I mean, I'm a horse person. Linda Bradley, she had shown horses when we were young, yeah. But that's not She's an active not, horse person. We're no. not in the community, the yep. horse community.
Yes.
And this is the first time we've had a really good candidate that I really feel. I mean, he's been out. He's evaluated the barns. He's looked at the stalls.
Okay.
He's taken the lead on part of the equestrian, on the arena piece of it. And he's very interested just in the community as a whole.
Okay.
And I felt really good
yeah,
with
my,
him.
Yeah, my concern is historically we've had our fair share of people who are interested in horse issues on the fair board. And I didn't know what the makeup of it was.
We don't have one.
You
we don't have one. No.
Okay.
Well, yes, we do. Now, excuse me. I'll back up. Mr. Shepherd. Dan Shepherd is horse racing.
Dan's
yes.
still on it? Okay.
But he's on horse racing. And
Dan's pretty passionate about it. He carries
horse
a lot
racing,
of,
yeah.
Yeah.
And with the arena project, though, it might be a different niche than horse racing, maybe. But of the total applicants, I guess, is the balance that you're saying is important.
It just seems like both of these applicants are pretty well-rounded. We don't want to get involved with the one-trick pony.
Yeah, it's, really.
I didn't bring my drumsticks, sorry.
No, and it wasn't necessary for that. Well, don't waste them on.
Well,
don't encourage.
And then the other thing, though, is to remember is that there is, Patty Kirkman is still on the board.
Okay.
And she is Significance the mother of Jen McGowan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so just that has to be disclosed.
No, absolutely. There's no conflict. That doesn't matter. You could put a whole family on the fair board if we wanted, but... I do feel like Jennifer's interests are a little bit different than her mom's, Patty Kirkland's.
They're day and night.
Yeah, they're different fields.
And have the ability to speak for themselves.
Yeah,
that would be the key for
you're
me.
You're not going to have to worry about that.
They're not redundant.
No, I don't think so.
By having both of them on there. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I've known Jennifer since high school. We were in band together. And, you know, so it's one of those things that I've worked with her husband.
I've shown pigs against her since the fourth grade.
Nice.
Yep.
Well,
I don't have any connection other than I like baseball nut ice cream.
Yeah.
So, do you know Mr. Nelson?
No, I do not know. I've read his.
I looked at the references. Yeah. I read the application.
Right.
There was another one in there that had some other horse experience, and that was Mr. Armstrong. And
I just kind of went on the information from Peggy that. This guy's already been out and, you know, take a look at the horse barns, and he's got some ideas.
He's walked through the whole midway and looked at all the barns, the livestock barns, the floral building, all that.
Yeah, I have served with a fair board that was less than stellar when I first came on. That was a very challenging 4 years. I have no reservations. I'm sure Mr. Nelson is a great guy, but I think you need to understand the gravity of putting people on this thing for a 4-year appointment. And the last thing we want to do is find out that somebody has presented themselves as a stellar individual, and then we find out that they're less than. Yeah. We've known Jennifer our whole lives. Yeah. I would like you to take one more week to evaluate who you're recommending for your fair board, because I guarantee you it's not fun if you don't have a team working together for the efforts of what you're trying to do in the next couple of years, which is probably the most monumental stuff you're ever going to tackle. Right. You have tackled in the last 7 years. Put the right team together and take one more week and evaluate it. That's what I would recommend, but it's up to the board. Just been there, done that with fun people.
Commissioner Morgan, your thoughts? I think I don't care who you pick. You're taking that chance that they won't work out. I guarantee it. There's no
100% that Jennifer's going to be just.
So I don't.
Did you have a chance to reach out to California's Fair Board to see kind of references there and background?
No, I did not.
Okay.
And I'm more than happy to do that.
It might be worth just seeing.
Just because
someone served on it. That's true.
It's your job for us to feel confident that you can answer and feel confident. And it wouldn't hurt just to do one little more.
Be glad to.
And I think you can evaluate all of the applicants that were. I was evaluating them evenly. I don't know when it came in.
So I'm seeing that Mr. Armstrong's came in just a week and a half ago as well. Yeah.
No rush for your appointment.
Do you want to put it off for a week?
Jennifer's is great. One more look over for every applicant.
Okay, so that would move it to not this coming weekly business session, which is next Wednesday, put it a week out from there?
Yeah.
Is that okay with you?
Okay.
And then give you a little chance to look at background.
And what would you like me to do? Go through, just do the
you
quick graph?
Work okay. on okay. every applicant okay. that we just looked at, and you say, yeah, this is who we want, and I don't know whose name it's going to be.
I think what happened was it came out in the paper again that the applications were still being accepted through like last
the day before
Tuesday
the end of the year.
You know, we actually accept applications all the time.
Yeah.
It's just at what point we're evaluating them, mm-hmm. and I would say today is the cutoff. These are only the ones that we're evaluating, but all of these should be looked at on an equal footing, and we would just really trust the liaison in these things to make a recommendation.
Okay.
And
we're working together
on
that.
Because it's in all our best
interests. Oh, Wednesday or next Thursday's admin just to confirm.
We remember the
when I
we'll come back
on
in a week.
Well,
and honestly, there's only a couple of them that are even on the list for me to compare and see.
Those were
Thomason.
We still had huge challenges.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll be back next Thursday.
Or you guys decide and you lead that discussion.
Yeah, we'll just decide. We'll hash it out, and then I'll just bring it up at the next admin.
I'll
and
do.
Then, so we put it on the,
okay.
the for the week.
Because I haven't even seen the other applicants.
Okay.
The last two.
Okay.
Okay.
Just good. Let's that's
you.
The right thing to do. You need
okay.
to look at them.
Yep.
You need to look at them.
Okay.
Figure it out.
Perfect.
All that,
thank
Linda?
You.
Yes. Are you moving forward with Jennifer?
We don't need to.
Okay.
I mean, no, she's the one.
I think Jennifer's in. We're in agreement on Jennifer.
Yeah.
Correct.
All three of us.
You're looking for one.
We're just looking for the second cog in the
okay, so we can go ahead and let her know because I have a fair board meeting next week.
Well,
Tuesday.
Then let's appoint her.
Okay.
Yeah, we could do that.
Let's do her, and then you've got one more to go.
Okay.
One more to go.
Perfect.
That way Jennifer's in. Okay.
Have we gotten a?
Hmm?
Has anybody actually resigned a letter?
Dennis has.
Okay.
So we have two openings. So one for resignation.
One for re-upping.
And I would think Jennifer would be the resignation piece, wouldn't it, or not?
Which one's the full? Is it fulfilling
we'll
a term?
Look at the
or?
time frame. If they're both open.
Oh, no. Dennis has still only got a couple years.
I would do the other one for Jennifer.
Right.
Yes.
I think so, too, and that would be an easier.
Great.
Excellent.
Okay.
Well,
Thank you.
Next up, our number four, our finance report and business update from Arthur O'Hare.
No brainer.
Thank you.
Hello, sir.
Hi.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Good morning. Well, what I have is just some.
Were you here last week?
All of January. I was here last week.
Our meeting was short last week in comparison.
That will be really funny.
It's July.
Just wait.
Happy
it'll be
New
December.
Year.
Happy New Year.
Well, it's fiscal New Year. You say. Chinese New
She's
Year.
She's real funny.
So I have. So a couple of informational things just to keep you appraised. Fleet is buying two vehicles for parks, two vehicles for sheriff. Those were approved by the board in prior times, but just let you know they're moving forward. They're going to do it. I am looking. I've made some inquiry with some folks on the budget committee member, which the board assigned me last week, so I've made inquiry with a few folks.
I had someone approach me about that yesterday.
Okay. Well, if you want to encourage them to submit an application, I'll be going out. I believe we posted on the website, but I wanted to tie down at least a knowledge of who might apply.
Question. Is this fulfilling somebody's term, or is this a
right.
whole new term?
This would be a whole new term.
Okay.
Yeah, a new three-year term. Your term.
Margaret Goodwin is not re-upping.
But she did complete her 3 years.
Right,
okay.
She completed her 3 years, yeah. So she's up in February. Is it in your packet, a building safety vehicle or replace a building safety? Did I? That
yes.
wasn't in there?
Oh,
that
yeah.
was the wreck
well,
vehicle,
we,
yes.
Yeah, that was the wreck
that.
Vehicle. Yeah. Yeah. So that one also, we do have budget, but we'll end up replacing that one. That wasn't identified in the original.
It was mentioned in that, and we didn't really discuss the fact that, so the department is going to be assessed additional depreciation
no,
on a vehicle 20,000 miles that they are not driving.
It'll
or is
be
that
unique. It'll be a modified version because they're getting some insurance reimbursement back.
So
the replacement vehicle will be a smaller amount,
okay.
Total amount. So they're
it's just key that we understand how these are.
Right, and within the fleet, the depreciation element is basically unique to each vehicle, depending on its age and mileage and when they, how long they feel that the vehicle is going to be around. That
there is a high level of confidence in our programs that that depreciation element is being collected and is fair and equitable and more reasonable than they could do on their own. And so they, I think that's one of the things that, like when we have the facilities discussion about, well, go try to find a facility someplace else that's triple net and blah, blah, blah. They feel confident. Yeah, yeah, I'm getting a deal at 65 cents a square foot. They do not feel that way about fleet. And that's something that I think we need to work on, that it should feel like a heck of a deal that I'm getting new windshield wipers. And instead of them costing $75 when they can go down to AutoZone and get them for $50 or $35.
I used to get mine on coupon at Costco for buy one, get one free at $7 a piece, you know.
Well, I have to do that every month. There's that. They have to feel confident that the program that we have for them is the best deal they can get and not being disadvantaged by I'm strapped into the county's program and it's costing me more than I'm doing for my own personal car.
Well, vehicles was always a concern for me across the pond because it just really didn't add up. They were paying more in basically running those things for their
from
vehicles
fleet.
From fleet. I went, you're paying $1,000 a month for a police car? Holy cow, you know. And it was just, and I was uncomfortable with the whole situation. There was very little documentation to support what they were getting charged per month. And that, and I think that maybe that's what you're asking for, is a complete breakdown of what, you know, you say I'm going to charge Park $700 a month for that pickup. What does that entail? What are you getting for $700?
I think that was also part of our review and assessment of public work.
Right.
So that will be a topic of discussion when with you and Mr. Brandis. So.
Yes.
I think so. That,
that was always something that I was uncomfortable with over across the street, and I think it the same here. It's probably the same everywhere.
I think we're still, at least in my mind, I've had, I know our contact from Enterprise Rent-A-Car and their program that they were offering, that's still an active discussion, so that's not over and done with either. But in that interim, we're still needing to replace vehicles and update vehicles.
Right.
So that's what's happening here.
Okay.
Is that when we were talking about the Enterprise contract, is that taken into consideration of where we stand with all the vehicles we were going to normally replace anyway, which we wouldn't have to go replace, you know, pay $27,000 for a rig when we could be putting that into... Yeah, we don't have to do that. We're just going to go to Enterprise. That basically saves us $27,000.
Let's have Arthur provide us the Enterprise conversation when we have that general discussion,
with,
if that's okay.
Yeah, we'll have that with. Yeah, we need to get
14
done
minutes
with this.
I'd like to take a little break in between.
Okay.
So the other thing that I just wanted to say is that we did get our final documents for the A Street Hospital, the old hospital building, the final documents
from the brownstone
For the brownfield.
No further
remediation, the other brown
abatement. Yeah,
we like brownstone.
Did you get a no further action?
It's conditional. It's conditional because they couldn't get underneath the existing building, and there was some historical leakage from those storage tanks. So it's conditional, but they've provided instructions on what to do when it comes time to demo that building. So,
And we have a conversation with another project manager next week.
Yes, next week.
Another potential
on the North Valley
person to do the North Valley Industrial Park. This person we've also worked with. So we'll be doing that and then providing a report and recommendation to the board following that about who we would suggest as being the top applicant.
Is there anything else that you need to talk to Arthur about, commissioners? Thank you, Arthur, very much. Moving on, how about other business? Item number 5. Is there anything else that would, anything else that should be properly come before the board this time?
I have stuff under board business we can do under management, commissioners, but nothing formal.
Okay, I think item number 6, is that our...
I can speak
o'clock?
To that. No, that's item number 6A is the update
update coordination plan with Community Wildlife Protection?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to just, we've talked about this before. The board approved and adopted the Community Wildfire Protection Plan project that we've been working on for 5 years through two consultants. And it's the first regional CWPP in the nation. It speaks a lot to how we want federal lands managed in our county that best provides for fire resilience to our communities. And so I just thought it was an appropriate thing that we include in our coordination plan and have it as a reference document. So we don't need to go into a whole lot of detail. If there's any questions about how that works, I'd be happy to answer those. Legal doesn't, I understand coordination pretty well, and I helped write the CWPP. And so anyway, if there's any questions in doing that, we'll just include that in as a kind of like a part of our coordination plan.
Okay, does this need to go forward or anything at all?
It does. It's a policy change. It would be an administrative
item. You want to put that on next week?
Any questions?
No, I mean, I know it needs to happen. I look forward to reading it.
And
I know the other one we have, the update the coordination plan, just the final draft for what it looks like.
Do you want to see it?
I don't want to see it before it comes next week. I know that it's on track with where it needs to be.
Yeah, and it hasn't changed that much. I mean, last year we did some things with you guys or before you guys got here of including the ONC Act and some other items that the Federal Lands Policy Management Act of 1976. And so we include those things that are relevant to how we want coordination to happen in federal lands management.
Is there anything in the wording that we could include that would be similar to the conversations we've had about how the BLM has the arrangements with ODF and just kind of a preference of all Josephine County lands we would prefer to have a fire suppression and plan with working with ODF. It's so consistent through our whole county.
The message is consistent.
Yeah, I know. I think that's a great idea. I mean, we passed that resolution of no confidence in the Forest Services, but also Senator Birchiger has got a piece of legislation encouraging the state to enter into negotiations with the Forest Service on their doing their resource management plan for the Northwest right now, and so it might call for some element. We just need to, I'd like to reach out to Herman, see what his legislation looks like, see what it calls for. It could definitely be introduced. It's usually, that would be a little different than what we would normally do, but it's certainly something we could put in our plan, as our preference did. It would be more along the lines of that we would like fire management to happen this way, not necessarily saying in our plan who is going to accomplish it that way.
And I'm okay with that.
Right?
Yes. And more the consistency. It's out in the Mail Tribune this morning that it cost $454 million to fight fires in Oregon this last year.
And what could it cost if you had used the Oregon Department of Forestry's attack plan?
Yeah.
That's a huge savings to the federal government, and that's
or the preventative actions that can happen ahead of time to save the cost. But I mean, it's just I know that if it's in the plan, then coordination.
And there is nothing in our CWPP that really speaks to.
But there's not a requirement to coordinate if it's not in our plan.
Yeah.
And
well,
so that's my thinking.
That's not true. There's a requirement to coordinate. We just don't have a leg to stand on if we don't have it in our plan to say we want it done a certain way.
Correct.
So let's get it in the plan. I'll work with Wally Herman to hammer out some language. It doesn't have to be long. It can be just a paragraph.
So do you want to still be on for next Wednesday?
Yeah, there's no problem. We can make amendments
to
our coordination plan anytime. Yep.
Commissioner, okay.
Yep. Intimately familiar with the 189 pages of the CWPP.
6B is the director step increase. We've got this is the last one before matters, and we'll be all set. We should get a short break before we get started.
Commissioner, so today is kind of the last step in finalizing reclassification of salaries tables, and I submitted recommendations a week or so ago. So really it's an opportunity to have any last comments. I've chatted with all three individually about your liaisons, and I think we're all right with the recommendation, unless there's anything that has come up that you'd like to discuss.
I think we should stick with the recommendations.
Yeah, I agree. Commissioner Hare?
Yeah, I had had some conversations with a couple of my liaisons, and I personally feel like I think we're in a good spot, and it's just, it's hard to balance, as Mr. Schofield knows, the difference between how we feel about the performance of our managers, but, and then the reflection of what it means, regardless of who's in that position.
Correct, yeah.
And it's really tough to make that distinction, because, you know, I couldn't be more proud of the couple of the managers that we have here, and want to just offer them the world, but at the same time, they're not always going to be in that position. We're going to get somebody next, and they need to be, we need to be able to have the flexibility you guys do, future boards, of working within what's a defensible range. One of the things that I've looked at is a couple of positions that are in neighboring counties, and there's an old additive, and I can't remember the commissioner who initially coined the phrase, if you've seen one county in Oregon, you've seen one county in Oregon. One of the ideas was the parks manager for Douglas County, for instance. What isn't necessarily known just by parks manager title is the fact that they also manage their 6,000 acres, apparently, for their forestry program. And so when you're comparing, apples and apples is a really hard thing to do, even if you're just looking at titles. And so we just need to step back and, you know, say that that's where we're at. So I feel good with what progress we've made. It won't be over. It never will be. But I think we've made some positive adjustments that reflect what's a comparative for our counties that we are statutorily look at. It's based on population, and then comparative programs within that is what Mr. Schofield does. Mm-hmm. There are some counties that we're comparators to that just are not in the same community situation that we are. So. It's
this
not perfect.
This is always a tough one for me because we're comparing when you have comparables. It's from one government employee to one government employee, and it completely, you know, that's not how the people outside that are walking up down the street, that's not how they click.
Yeah.
So that's very hard for me to do as a commissioner. It's tough. But, you know, I think we've got pretty good product yeah. here.
And I always say that I mostly do that. In some entities, you have to do that because there is no private sector equivalent.
Right, exactly.
But with certain positions, we do look at the private sector as well. Forestry manager was one of them that we did.
Yeah. So
I endorse moving it forward. We're
well, no, it's okay. In about 2 minutes after the break, it's going to be done.
Do you want it?
No, we're okay.
It's an unusual thing.
I love it.
Sunlight,
I love it. I'm
going to
be working on my tan.
We all could use it. So, yeah, I'm where it is where it is. So.
Okay, so we're good to move this forward?
Well, I think we're just
approving it.
So as it relates to the methodology for approval, I think the most efficient is to just have each commissioner sign off on the departments that they're liaison to, and I'll bring the PRs, and you all can sign off on the ones that you're responsible
okay,
to.
Perfect. And that is an agreement? Care.
But the full board has adopted that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Great. I wanted you to mention something while you're here. So
sure.
At a meeting that I was at in Salem, we were discussing the element of almost like a prejudice given, and Commissioner DeYoung's raised this issue, with people who have reached a degree, but then there's people in the community applicant pool. I think we set the bar arbitrarily when requiring a bachelor's degree for certain positions that may or may not actually be better served by having that. And I just want us to be conscious of that in all of our job descriptions. In this one, it says that specifically. And it may be appropriate, given it's a federally funded program and a bachelor's requirement or associates is appropriate. But then there are others that their funding stream comes either through general fund or revenues in a particular program where a bachelor's is not necessarily an end-all be-all and maybe or doesn't serve any real matrix of why it should be in there. And that we don't afford ourselves good applicants because we set that bar. And I think you're going to...
I'm gonna come right out and say it. I can't apply for any job in this building because I need not apply. I don't have the qualifications to come up those steps.
You do.
Now.
No, as your business owner, See, in all of them, they say a bachelor's degree or equivalent experience or something like that. They usually have a mm-hmm. justifying other mm-hmm. sentence. And you have 35 years of management or supervision or something like that. So your work experience challenges the education thing that you would qualify under that.
I'm allowed in the room, but they're going to go to, but most people will go towards the educational aspect element of it every
it's
time.
Because that's so what just, our focus has been, and I just wonder if even experience. We can put it in the job descriptions that doesn't that emphasizes that as the preliminary get in the door kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. What is it that we're really looking for in saying
right.
that?
Right.
And a qualifier could
be. You don't
want
to turn away somebody that could really help you
it's
out.
It's just a different way of potentially phrasing it in our job descriptions and the way we think about it. So.
But this is also why we give extra credit of sorts or consideration of veterans, because there is something to the skills that you learn in the military that may not be translated into a degree, but it is specific extra skills that would qualify you for a job. And so there's other considerations that go into those. But I hear what you're saying.
Okay.
I'll take a look at it and see if maybe we can word it differently. Because ultimately, I actually value work experience over education under most fields. It's kind of HR industry standard for every couple of years of experience equates to a year of education. So if you got 10 years experience, you've got a master's degree.
You're a PhD in cars, Dan.
You think about it. If you've been in an industry for
JJ, you've got your task, so you know what we're looking for, I think.
All right.
So,
thank you.
6C is matters from commissioners.
Being that it's 11 o'clock.
Yeah, I'd like to take a short break before we...
Goals email for 2018, setting up those. That's really, I think, we've got a draft.
Yeah, we've got a draft, so we'll
good.
Take that around.
As long as we get that out there. And then something that I think we need to be thinking about in our talk with all of our managers is the PR and having a county element of branding. We have our community development director in the room. I think that's like one of those initial uses of economic development that we should just get out the door, and then we depreciate that for 5 years if we just did it. We don't have it now. We should bite the bullet, get that under our belt, and every program having done a good website and mm-hmm. had that stuff. Fairgrounds has done a great job of it. Parks wants to do it. They just need that emphasis, I think, by the board in a collective way that every program needs to do.
That's part of our goal.
Well, to me, I see as economic development is kind of being the tie between all of those. Mm-hmm. And for me, my concern is, like we said with the website before, we don't want 10 different websites.
No.
We want to see a consistent messaging. And I think, I know that's something that I've, John and I have briefly just started to talk about.
Good.
But I think Julie needs to be at the table as a key component of that.
Well, as we go forward with our goal setting, that maybe we need to set some target dates on that for deliverable.
Perfect.
Okay. We're going to adjourn real quick, like at 11:01. We're going to take a short break. If the audience would just bear with us for a little bit, because we've been at this since early this morning, and some of us need to get another cup of coffee.